Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. This week we have a special report, something that is new to Civil Defense Radio. A special report will be anything I feel is of such importance that the information must be given to you. I want you to be informed, so I try to bring you information that is useful and relevant to your civil defense preparations. At the end of the show, I always say, be safe, be informed, and be prepared. This show and our Facebook and Twitter pages is how I help you stay informed. However, Facebook is where I post most often. One of my favorite guests on this show is Jonathan Hollerman, author of Survival Theory, A Preparedness Guide. To find out more about this great book and Jonathan, go back to episodes 5 and 6, and you'll find out a lot more. This book and others he has written are available on Amazon. Jonathan has produced a small report, Grid Down, Death of a Nation. In this report, he speaks about the main reasons he believes the way he does about grid-down life in America, the psychology behind human behavior when thrust into a survival situation where desperation, starvation, and living without rule of law, WROL, is suddenly thrust upon you. I will have a link to this report in the show notes, so be sure to check out the notes at civildefenseradio.com. Now, let's welcome John back to the show. Hello, John. Welcome back.
Hello, Preston. How are you?
Great, great. It's a pleasure having you back on the show and this report that you wrote and we're going to be talking about today is going to set some people's hair on fire, I think, but also open up a lot of eyes.
Well, I hope so. I spent a lot of time crafting that, trying to craft it correctly with the proper wording without, you know, there's a fine line because anytime somebody takes my approach, they really get painted with the fear-mongering brush. I somewhat embrace that because I believe that if you don't explain to people the truth of what's coming in a prolonged grid-down environment, if you don't explain to them the horrific tragedies that will occur, I think you're doing them a kind of an injustice and kind of giving them a false hope. I should say false hope because there's always hope, and I don't live my life in fear. But I think, you know, and in the report, it's mainly written to the military as a response to my being a attendee at the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force, the war gaming on the grid down front. And kind of the main push of that is if you don't understand your operating environment that you're going to be operating in, your plans, you can't make effective plans. I mean, every military strategist knows this. I mean, you have to know where you're going, the people, the thought process, the culture, the, you know, the what is the lay of the ground, what's the topography. They look at all this information. How do we think people are going to react when we come in here with uniforms? And so these are, you know, anytime there's any kind of strategy made in the military, you have to understand your operating environment before you make a plan. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do with the American people is kind of correct some of the misunderstandings of a long-term grid-down scenario and the aftermath of that scenario and the human desperation, starvation, and living without rule of law aspects of it. And what exactly does that look like? I'm trying to paint the broad brush and kind of give some perspectives from my experience dealing with hungry and starving people. So if nothing else, hopefully people understand that I'm not trying to scare them, but if you're going to make plans to survive this type of scenario or prepare for this type of scenario, you have to understand what's coming before you make plans or it could lead to your detriment.
Yes. You know, you were talking about that that preparation. You know, the military term for that is intelligence prep of the battlefield. And that I've operated under that theory in my law enforcement career too. So it's always good to know what your environment's going to be and who your adversaries could potentially be. So this book, our own psychology may be part of our threat profile. Your reports, I mean, we'll get to that in just a minute. So let's take a quick break to get this out of the way. Hello, friends. Let me talk about essential oils for a minute. More specifically, let's talk about the website. Our website is oils, O-I-L-S, four, that's a number four, lifetoday.com. This is the URL we use to redirect you to the doTERRA's replicated site that is a lot more complicated. So to make it simple, I created this URL. But it looks like some have not been able to get to the site by using the URL. So let's do this. If you wish to use the www.oils4lifetoday.com URL, then type or copy and paste this into your browser and you should be good to go. If not, there will be the full URL in the show notes at the bottom for your convenience. We really do depend on our oils to keep us healthy throughout the year. Now, I can't say that I'm injury-free, though, but my copaiba oil has helped with the pains and trials of getting older. Okay, real quick. There is a lot of conversation about CBD oil. We have something that is comparable and is naturally sourced that works just as well, in my opinion, as CBD oil. Ours is called Copaiba Essential Oil. Check it out on our website and read about some of the great things that it can be used for. Thank you to those who have reached out about the URL problems, and I hope that more of you will visit our site and learn more about the great products we have. Thank you very much. Stay healthy. And we're back with Jonathan Hollerman, and we're going to be speaking about his new report, Grid Down, Death of a Nation. So, Jonathan, let's go into the intro of your report here and talk a little bit about that. You have some good information in here. You mentioned the Lloyd's of London report. I've read that, and I don't know why it hasn't had more weight in this fight against the power industry, because it tells them that their insurance could be lessened cost-wise if they do more to prepare for any type of disaster that keeps their stuff together and running.
Yeah, I don't get that either. I was meeting with a group of gentlemen in California here over the weekend and making a presentation, and one of them brought that up, and it's really the first time I really thought about it. Like I just don't understand why the electric utilities would be fighting so hard to prevent this from happening. And you know, it's always been, oh, it's their bottom line, it's their stakeholders, and you know they'd have to raise electricity. And he was like, you know, well, wouldn't that be good for them, like if they're raising electric rates? And I had to sit there and think about it. I'm like, well, if they raise electric rates, they technically be making more money. That he uses as an excuse to raise them extra, is what the guy said. I was like, that's a good point. I don't know. But it is a fact. I mean, if you go over to Michael Mabey, if you type in Michael Mabey, I think it's .info, he has a tremendous, I mean, this guy is the tip of the spear when it comes down to researching what's going on in the electric utilities and their fight against getting the electric grid hardened. And it's kind of unbelievable at the lengths the second largest lobbying firm in the United States, the electric utilities, will go to put out false science, to put out false information, to demonize anybody. They're going after kind of anybody that the EMP commissioner, anybody that goes against what the fake science that they're pushing behind their reasoning not to harden the grid. So it's very frustrating from a consulting perspective, because it's hard to wrap your head around. I mean, we're talking about tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people dying from a scenario like this. And $4 billion is a lot of money, but in the scheme of our country and things that are going on, I mean, that's a drop in the bucket.
It is. It is. You did a great job of writing this report, and it's so packed full of information. It's hard to choose exactly what I want to talk about. But let me just go over real quick. You say, before we begin, a few parameters. You have four parameters. This paper is strictly written from the perspective of a long-term grid-down scenario. Number two, this does not apply to grid-down events that can be resolved in less than a week or two. Number three, this is written from the perspective that the attack is sudden and no last-second planning was available. Four, this is written to our current position of readiness and not taking into account a hardened grid in the future. So that sets the stage of where we are right now and how people should enter this report with the knowledge that they're going to gain from it. You can't interpret any pie in the sky, well, this will happen or that'll happen, because it's not going to happen, because nobody's prepared to do that pie in the sky stuff.
So that's a good point. It's a caveat that I forget to add a lot of times when I do a lot of podcasts and like shows and video shows and everything, but I always forget to add at the beginning, like, hey, when you're talking to me, when you're talking to, you know, my perspective, it's always geared toward the worst possible threat to our country. My company motto is prepare for the worst, hope for the best, let God do the rest. So, yeah, we're talking about a long-term grid out scenario where the high-voltage transformers in this country are destroyed, whether that be by cyber, a CME massive solar flare, a physical attack on the grid, or an EMP attack. So that is the parameter. So anybody listening, that's what we're coming at, is that, hey, the electric grid has been functionally destroyed. It's not coming back online for at least a year. And there's a lot of information on it. We won't get in the weeds because I think we discussed that before. But the high voltage transformer is the Achilles heel of this nation. They are about 400 tons each. They're specifically made for each location. They take 12 to 18 months to build today from South Korea and Germany. Like I said, there's such a long lead time, and we only replace about 12 a year. And we're talking about, especially an EMP solar flare, we could be losing 300 to 3,000 of them in one shot. So the chances of getting those replacements, you're going to lose a large percentage of the population before the first replacements show up on short. And if that's the case, I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly here, but I mean, 12 to 18 months in, you lose 80, 90% of your population. I mean, who are they delivering these transformers for? Who's going to hook them up? How are they going to get them anywhere? So I believe wholeheartedly if this were to happen today, I don't know that there's any, you don't recover from it. So the point is if we can get the electric grid hardened, it's still going to be a travesty. It's still going to be horrific. And it may take, you know, even up to a month to get repairs made to the electric grid to get some semblance of power up and running to certain areas of the country, but at least you have a lifeline. At least you have a shot of recovering from it. If this were to happen today, and I mean, you see things heating up with Iran and North Korea, if one of these countries were to take us out today, we're in rough shape.
Yeah, I agree.
And that was really reinforced. So just to let everybody know, about 3 months ago, I was invited to be a member of the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force at LeMay War Gaming Center down in Maxwell Air Force Base. So they brought in kind of every agency. I mean, everybody was there. All the military branches, the NSA, CIA, Pentagon, Los Alamos, the electric utilities were there. Basically, anybody with a dog in a fight, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, kind of everybody was there. And they presented at the beginning of this conference a scenario that we were just attacked by an EMP, and they basically said, go. Everybody break up into groups and start planning this. And so how do we come back from this? How do we respond to this? And to put it bluntly, it scared the living dickens out of me, because I knew the government wasn't prepared. I knew previously that 99% of the U.S. military is reliant on the civilian electric grid, but I was completely blown away at the lack of overall preparedness. Now, I'm not demonizing the members of the military. I'm absolutely praising the guys that put this on, General Kwas and Major Stuckenberg and General Krosniak and many others that were there that were basically trying to raise awareness to the military that this is a serious issue. And if we expect to have continuity of government, continuity of military, we have to have a hardened electric grid. And it was some of the things that were revealed at this. And you can go, anybody can go right now and read the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force, available at the Air University, EDTF 2.0. It's a 2019 report that was just released here about a month ago. And that is kind of where my report came in. Because after attending that and sitting in a lot of these sessions and listening to a lot of the, you know, the great, well-meaning individuals that were there, I mean, a couple major things that stood out to me. Not a single person mentioned food. I mean, they're making military level plans for responding to this type of situation. And not a single one of them ever said, hey, By the way, we've got to feed our troops, because every ounce of food that comes onto a military base is by civilian contract, by civilian trucking company. There's civilian cooks and chefs, and basically the entire military is fed by civilians at this point, and that stops.
Wow.
And there's no big mountains of grain on base. They're not hiding or hoarding food on the bases. I mean, they have some MREs, but it's probably enough to feed their troops for a day or two.
If that.
They're not even mentioning bringing the troops' families on base to feed them, because, you know, if you somehow figure out a way to feed the troops on base, but their families and their wives and children are in town starving to death, and there's fires and rioting and looting going on 2 or 3 weeks into this, you think that troop's going to stay on base and keep pulling levers and pushing buttons? You got to get behind.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was kind of the nature of this report with that. Like, hey, you guys are really focusing on your response to these things and how you're going to do this and how you're going to do that. But some of the very core basics, you don't even have a plan for. And all your planning is going to just go down the toilet. If you can't feed people and give them fresh water and protect them from the elements, those troops, you know, they're not going to stay there. And that goes for any corporate civil defense group. It goes for anybody planning in the planning stages for emergency preparedness. If you don't feed people, you might as well try and herd cats. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, you've mentioned Michael Mabee and the EDTF report. I'm going to have those links in this at the bottom of the show notes for people to link to as well. I'll put the 2018 report there also for anybody who's interested in that, because that's important to know about. Just a quick note, InfraGuard, we're having a conference in November on the 20th and 21st in D.C., I believe. I can't remember the exact location, but Jonathan, if you're available, I think it'd be good to go. I was told that the person from the National Security Council, who is responsible for the presidential executive order on electromagnetic disturbances, is going to be a speaker at that event. So hopefully you'll be able to make it.
Yeah, I'll look at my calendar. DC is not a That's a pretty easy trip for me.
Yeah.
I'll definitely take a look at it. If somebody wants, with that organization, with InfraGuard, wants to reach out to me, I know I met numerous people in that organization at the EDTF conference, so I'd be happy to look at attending that as well. If they want me to speak, I'd be happy to speak. Like I said, I do come out of this out of left field from most preparedness planners, some of the large organizations that show up to these things. In my opinion, they're missing the forest for the trees. They use their experience dealing with things like Katrina or hurricanes or earthquakes, but every single one of those cases, they have food. Their helpers and their organizations, the people are fed that are down there helping the other people. They're bringing food to people. They're bringing supplies to people. In this situation, you can't even activate your call roster to get your organization set up. There's no radio, there's no TV, there's no internet, there's no
nothing. There's nothing. It's silent.
Everything stops.
Yeah.
And so, a lot of times I see them talking about the response plans for a long-term grid down scenario, and they're using the same game plan. They're using the same blueprint they've used 100 times in different areas. And it's not going to work in this scenario. It's just flat out not going to work. And I unfortunately, a lot of them just don't see that.
Yeah. One of the things that they're not thinking about also is the economic collapse that happens as soon as the grid goes down. Yeah. Our dollar becomes essentially worthless if we can't get things going here. And then the rest of the world suffers because everybody is linked to the largest economy in the world, which is us. And so we are the first domino that falls, but we will be hit the hardest because the grid down is here. Unless it's a solar flare that wipes out the northern hemisphere, then Europe and quite a few other countries will be affected as well. This scenario, people are not thinking about it, and they're just not taking it serious, especially people in the planning emergency planning realm whose job it is to think out of the box and try and think about what could happen and what should be done. It's disheartening to be slammed by people who should know that there's a threat out there and they have no clue.
Yeah, that's, thinking outside the box, that's a good way to put it. I use the phrase, they have a lack of imagination. Part of this, I wouldn't even go there. I was going to say part of this would be some of the kind of the preparedness fiction that's covered the subject. I mean, I think everybody's written a fictional book on EMP post-apocalyptic genre, and they probably read, I mean, One Second After is a great version of that. Most of the other books in the genre are pretty rough when it comes to their explanation of how society is going to react to this type of scenario. They're very wishy-washy. I think one, like a weekend, there was a, and I'm not going to name it, but like a week, this is a pretty popular one, but a weekend after an EMP, the grocery store manager down the road sits out front with a chair with a policeman standing next to her, and they'll let people in to get food, but they're only allowed to get $50 and they're only taking cash. I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, what $9.50? You know, small grocery store manager is going to freaking show up a week into a grid down collapse when people are, you know, rioting and looting.
And where'd the cop come from?
What interest does she have in that corporate grocery store? She has no vested interest. I guarantee you she doesn't have stock in it, right?
Yeah.
And that corporation probably ceases to exist at this point. Same with the police officer. The police officer is probably more likely going to be looting the store than he is protecting it. And that's not to denigrate policemen. I'm saying that from a human standpoint, from a, you know, he's probably got a hungry wife and kids at home.
Yeah.
It's kind of an echo chamber. I call it the YouTube prepper sphere. Kind of, there's a big echo chamber online with just regurgitating a lot of ideas from 30 and 40 years ago, preparedness wise, from urban prepping and that, I mean, that's an oxymoron. Those two statements do not go together, like, you know, water and oil, urban prepping. And then like the lone wolf concept and the gray man concept, there's so many of these concepts that may have worked in a financial, that may work in a financial collapse or possibly a pandemic or something, but they're just not, I mean, if you think you're going to sneak around town, you know, with a garbage bag over your head in the middle of the night, and a grid down, you know, 2 weeks in a grid down environment, and like you're not going to get caught, and it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyways, but I've been bashing a lot of my cohorts here, so let's move on to something positive.
Yeah.
That I wrote.
Well, your report breaks things down into three factors: human desperation, which I'll read each of these quick definitions here. Human desperation, a feeling of complete hopelessness and a life out of control. It's a negative psychological response to living in a horrific social disorder that is completely unrecognizable to a person's previous way of life and will likely prove to be unmanageable for the average person. The second one is starvation. This does not include food deprivation, but true starvation on a scale that has never been seen in this nation. After a short time, civilians and military alike could go days and possibly weeks without a single substantial meal. The psychological and mental effects this will have on the U.S. population is drastically ignored in most emergency planning. And then the third, living without rule of law. Living in an environment where there is no rule of law other than self-regulation will quickly lead to horrible atrocities not seen since the 12th century. Witnessing these events will be traumatic to most individuals. I think those three factors are going to have an equal proportion almost, except without rule of law, will probably win out in the long term as to costing people their lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
the biggest threat of this scenario is not the fact that you have human desperation. We've seen that in Katrina. It's not that you have starvation. We've seen that in foreign countries in the past, China, Russia. It's not that you have living without rule of law. We've seen that after a hurricane or in various countries like Libya where things fall apart and kind of every man for himself.
Well, in Puerto Rico, we had some of it, just a small example of it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we see all three of these things throughout history. If we have a long-term grid down event in the United States, it will be the first time that I can find or that I could put together in history where you have all three at the same time. You have no government oversight. You have nobody stepping in to organize, to fix things, to maintain order. There's no martial law. I mean, you might for the first week or two, but I'm talking 6 months into a grid down event. There's no military. If you think the military is coming to bring you MREs, I mean, I've got oceanfront property in Arizona to tell you. I mean, it's just not going to happen. Okay. So if you're talking about living without rule of law, and then you figure in the starvation aspect on top of that, where, I mean, every can of spam is going to be looted in the first week in a grid down environment. No interstate trucking. There's no food distribution centers. The canning facilities are all shut down. Everything stops. So whatever food's in the grocery store down the street from you, that's all the food you're ever going to see. Okay, that's it.
Personal pets will be gone.
So once the local food is picked clean and eaten, and we're talking 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks tops, where every speck of food has been eaten. From that point forward, we're going to see starvation on a biblical scale. And I mean, never before seen in history. I mean, you look back at Russia, and I mean, people will point to what the Chinese did to their people. But we're talking about famines 150 years ago in foreign countries when those people understood how to grow food. They didn't have it, they understood how to forage. They understood that, hey, I need to boil my water before drink. They understood a lot of these concepts where the American population has no clue how to live without electricity. They don't know the first thing about self-reliance, farming, storing vegetables over the course of a winter. So it's going to be 5 times, 10 times, 100 times worse, the starvation aspect here. You got 350 million people that with no food infrastructure, no way to feed them. And then that is going to go into, you know, the mixture of starvation and living without rule of law, with no oversight, no police, no military, basically every man for himself. There's going to be atrocities that are going to happen that have never been seen in this country or probably in any country for a long time. And that's going to lead to human desperation because you're going to be living in a world that doesn't make sense. I mean, today we live in a society, we live in a world, we may disagree on politics, we may disagree on morals on a micro level. But on a macro level, we agree, hey, you don't shoot that guy to steal what's in his backpack. On a macro level, everybody plays by the same rules.
Right.
For the most part. Because if you don't, you go to jail. And they throw the key away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In this scenario, it's every man for himself. I mean, and a lot of people living in that environment aren't going to understand how to function. And so what's going to happen is, in my opinion, I believe it's going to turn into kind of like a feudal society. You're going to have essentially over the course of a year, people are going to be so desperate for food, for any kind of resources, they will basically check their conscience at the gate, and they will do things that they never thought that they were capable of doing to stay alive. And a lot of people really focus on that, but it really changes if you have children, especially if you have young children. You can't convince me 99.9% of parents will do anything it takes to get food for that kid, okay? And I think they're going to people are going to start attaching themselves to groups, functional groups, because you're going to have to. You're either going to get really, really good at hiding, and it's hard to hide if you have no food and you got to go out and hunt for food. They're either going to get really good at hiding, or they're going to have to attach themselves to a larger group. And I think the different groups will fight each other and over resources. And it's going to be a completely different world. And a lot of people, their brains aren't even going to be able to process the world they're living in and understand how to make decisions in that environment. So
will the women and children will be very vulnerable in an environment like that because of the deprivation that people go to. I mean, I think of ISIS when you were talking a minute ago and what they did in Syria and what they did to the people in those areas that they controlled. There were some horrific things that they did to women and children. Even men, they did, but that was just sheer torture for the torture aspect. But they had harems of women and girls and boys, and they did what they wanted.
Preston, you can't talk about that, sir. That is not, you're not allowed to bring that information up to bear in this conversation, sir.
Oh, well, we're real on this show.
The media don't cover this. They don't talk about that side of the atrocities that happened in most wars. But I mean, you can look at World War II, and after the Russians took over Germany, I mean, there were some horrific thing that the Russians did to the German women, and a lot of that's the evil nature of man at their core, and an unregenerate, unsaved. I mean, human nature is it's evil at its core, and I think a lot of liberals and a lot of kind of left leaning audience, the socialist crowd, will say, "Oh, you know, we've evolved past that. We're just, you know, we're human." Humans, we're just so kind, and we're just going to work together, and we're going to hold hands and sing kumbaya. And we're they're clueless as to what's coming, and
that's a pipe dream.
And the American people just think that it's just going to be this. Yeah, it's going to be a tough time. You know, we're probably going to be hungry. We'll have to go to some government, you know,
yeah,
the camp or something to get food. Or it's
there won't be any camps.
No clue what's coming down the pike.
The camps will be ran by warlords.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you might get into one of those camps, but you're going to have to do things that you're not, you may not be mentally prepared to do to get food. So.
Yeah. Especially women and children.
Yeah.
So yeah, because I mean, they're going to be a commodity.
A lot of people don't talk about that. They gloss over that stuff, but that's absolutely, I mean, go back to the Vikings, go back to medieval days. That's where we're headed.
Yeah.
We're headed back to survival of the fittest. It's not even, I mean, it's in our DNA. It's human nature, and most people think we've got past that, but we're not.
No, we're not. The desperation is pretty well fleshed out. Well, we went way long in this interview with Jonathan, and we're going to have to make it into two parts. So next week will be part two, and we will be covering starvation, desperation, and the mental aspects of grid-down reality. Now, when you're preparing, be sure to include this information in your preparations, because in a grid-down environment, this is the way it's going to be. It's stark, it's frightful, but it's reality. Unfortunately, it's what it is. So we will catch you next week. I appreciate you listening. Please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time. Bye-bye.